Delighted to say hello to Becky Wagner as well, who spent many years here. It's lovely to see you back, Becky. Okay. And I think it's been a bit of a weekend for Grace. Is that right, Grace? You're off to Greece soon? For 3 months? Yeah, so pray for Grace. When did you leave?
Friday.
Right, 3 months, no singing in Greece. So pray for Grace as she goes and for that time. So Happy New Year. I heard on the radio that you're not supposed to say Happy New Year after the 2nd of January. I don't know if that's true, but since I haven't seen most of you, Happy New Year. How are you feeling? Do you know what? We've had a problem in our house. I'm going to be more careful from tomorrow what I eat, because we have had this absolute flood of chocolate. Has anyone had a flood of chocolate? Yeah. And my aim has been to get it all eaten by tonight, which is really silly. It's just not the right way to do things. And it wasn't a Christmas present, but I bought something off the internet. You know when you buy clothes in shops and they got the little thing, like extra small, small, medium, large, extra, you know those little, well, whatever you call them anyway, button things? I bought a box of those so I can code my wardrobe. And so this morning I've got three suits. They're small, medium, and large. The small one I've only worn once. It was good while it lasted, but I'm back on the medium this morning. But I hope to get back to that small soon. So I don't know if you identify with any of that or feel the same way. Can I have the PowerPoint jacket? Perhaps that's too much honesty. Pursuit of happiness. That picture may not be exactly how you're feeling. Here's a little message. Christmas is over. Get back to work. We have our young people in this morning, and here's a T-shirt that you could think of purchasing. It's so great to be back in school. I was getting so tired of sleeping in and enjoying life. But spare a thought for your teachers as well. Sweetie, you have to come out. It's the first day at school. No, I refuse to go. They can get someone else to teach my classes. Anyway, new term, new sermon series, and we're looking at the Sermon on the Mount. I say new. We have done this series before. Longer ago than some of you might think. It was actually in 2010. So I'm just curious, could you put your hand up if you've joined HBC since 2010? Yeah, quite a significant proportion. The reason we've returned to this isn't just because it's 9 years since we last looked at this sermon, but because the teaching of Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount is so down to earth, so practical, so relevant for daily living, that it's just great to be reminded of these teachings. And so we're going to look at the Beatitudes this morning. Here they are. I hope you can read this okay. I'll read it out. So Matthew 5, verses 1 to 12. Now when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him and he began to teach them. He said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." And the recurring word is the word blessed. In Greek, the word is this word. It's makarios, makarios. Now, makarios does mean blessed. It also means happy. And so you may have come across some translations that actually, instead of blessed, they use happy. The Good News Version, for example, is one of those. But most don't, even though the word does mean happy. And the reason they don't is because if we use the word happy, it miscommunicates. Because when we think of happiness, we tend to think of it as an emotion. as a feeling. I feel happy. A bit like that Pharrell Williams song. You know a great song, Happy? How does it go? Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof. Do you feel like a room without a roof? Some days we do, don't we? We just feel like a room without a roof, and we feel happy. We feel happiness is our truth. Anyway, there's nothing wrong with that, and I will happily take a dose of that kind of happiness each day, if I can get it, when I get it. But the word makarios means a lot more than that. It means someone who is in a happy state. They are in a happy condition in life. They're in a blessed state. Almost something that someone would look at them and say, oh, that's a great life they have there. Almost a life to be envied. So it's happiness as a state of being. And so in the light of that, I would like to retitle the sermon. I think I'm allowed to do that because I gave the titles. I called this The Pursuit of Happiness, a bit of a nod to Will Smith, if you know that. But I've changed it to Happy New Year for two reasons. One is because the word Makarios means happy, but also because this is our first Sunday after New Year's Day. And what a great way to begin the year to say, well, actually, what does it mean? What does it mean to have a Happy New Year? We've been saying Happy New Year to lots of people. We were up north, and I said Happy New Year to lots of strangers that I'd never met before. But what do we mean? What are we saying? What are we hoping for them when we say Happy New Year? What do we want? What do we want for ourselves? Oh, I hope I have a Happy New Year. What will that look like? And I think that actually Jesus gives us a secret to happiness in these verses. But it's not what you might expect. In fact, that's an understatement. In some ways, some of it's the exact opposite to what you would expect. But there is something here that is a key to happiness. The happy, according to Jesus, are those who are poor in spirit, those who mourn. The happy are the meek. The happier those who are not pursuing indulgence, but are choosing holiness. The happier the merciful, the pure, the peace-loving, even those who are persecuted and insulted. So I think it's quite a countercultural message this morning. What I want to do is run through the Beatitudes one by one. It's not an eight-point sermon, because I'm going to go through these very quickly, but I just want to say a few words about each one. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Poor in spirit, what does that mean? Well, the poor in the Old Testament were normally the economically poor, but the thing with being economically poor is it often causes people to look to God, because they recognize even more than the rich that their dependence is on him. So the poor became laden with also a spiritual meaning in the Old Testament, just as richness became laden with riches often take you from God. And so the poor in spirit here are those, Jesus is saying, those who look to God in humble dependence. And he says, theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. That word mourn there, it's not specifically speaking about the mourning of bereavement. It's more to do, the word and the way it's used, to do with penitence. Mourning over your sin. I mean, Dave said, you know, it'd be great this year if we have a year where we're thirsty for God instead of being up and down. And up and down is often the description of us, description of me. But I wonder when we last felt sad about our sin or actually grieved and mourned over it. Jesus says that those who mourn will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. That's not the what society would tell us. Society would say it's the strong who get through. Look, you know, look at the apprentice, people climbing over each other to try to get to the top. Jesus says, no, actually, it's the ones who are often overlooked, the meek, the ones who have a realistic view of themselves and honor others. Those are the ones, actually, ultimately, who will inherit. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. What do we hunger and thirst for? You know, are we hungering for the things that God has for us? As we hunger for those, he says, we will be filled. God will not leave us feeling dissatisfied. He will fill us. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Again, you know, the world often doesn't talk about mercy. It may talk about revenge or retaliation, standing up for yourself, for your rights. But Jesus says here, actually, the merciful are in the happy condition of life, and they will receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Takes me back to Psalm 24. Who may ascend the hill of the Lord? The one who has and a pure heart. And it says here that the pure in heart will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. You probably know that, some of you know, my one word summary of the gospel is the word reconciliation. Because through Christ, through what he has done for us in his death, he has brought peace between us and God. He has brought us into relationship with God, so we're reconciled. And just as we're reconciled to God and at peace with him, so God expects us to live in peace with others, on our streets, in our homes, in the playground, in church. Live at peace. And if we do, we will be called children of God, because God is a God of peace. And then finally, blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Jesus says, blessed here. Actually, if you go to Luke's gospel, you know, you've got the equivalent sermon in Luke's called the Sermon on the Plain, not the Sermon on the Mount. I think it's Luke 6. Jesus says, leap for joy. Amazing, isn't it? Persecuted. When you think what the apostles went through, Jesus said, leap for joy. Why? Because you're sadomasochistic? No. He said, because great is your reward in heaven. So those are the Beatitudes. But for me, the point of the Beatitudes is not necessarily to take them one at a time. Of course, you could do that. You could make a sermon of each one of them. But I think the real value, is look at them as a whole to see what they say. And I think the first thing I want to say is God, Jesus, expects us to be all of these things. These are characteristics that should mark all of us as Christians. It's no good saying, well, I'm merciful and I'm a peacemaker, but I'm not pure in heart and I don't hunger and thirst for righteousness. It's a bit like the fruit of the Spirit, isn't it? It's like saying, well, I've got love and joy. I've got no peace and patience and kindness and goodness. You know, that's hopeless. And the fruit of the Spirit, hello, are you doing that? That spotlight's going on and off. Fruit of the Spirit is something which we have in totality because it's a fruit of the Spirit. So if the Spirit is in us, those 9 fruits should be within us, yeah? We may be cooperating with the Spirit or not cooperating in some of those, but the point is they are the work of God in us. And I think in a similar way, these Beatitudes, it's no good saying, oh, well, that one's good for me, that one not so much. They should characterize our whole lives. But the next thing is, with these Beatitudes, the 8 of... I do believe there are 8. Some people say there are 9, but I think the last 2 are the same. But anyway, with these 8 Beatitudes, you can see that along with these characteristics, there are then these 8 blessings or these 8 rewards, 8 privileges. And if you look at them, the first and the last are the same. For theirs is the kingdom of heaven, and that's in the present tense. The other 6... in between, sandwiched in between, are all in the future tense. Okay, so there is a sense in the Christian life of Jesus saying, your reward is now, but also your reward is coming. You know, we are enjoying some of the first fruits of the reward of following Christ, but not all of it. You know, the meek haven't inherited the earth yet, or at least not when I last saw the news. So we're on our way. But we're getting there. The main thing is to come. But the main thing I want to highlight from these Beatitudes is what sort of person are they describing? What sort of person are they describing? It seems to me that each of them describes somebody who is close to God, someone whose life is orientated towards God and who is seeking to be ever nearer to him. So if you're poor in spirit, where do you go? You go to God because you know that God is your resource. You are dependent on him. If you mourn over sin, Where does that take you? Well, I hope it takes you to God for forgiveness and restoration. If you hunger and thirst for righteousness, where does that appetite drive you to? It should drive us to God. And I believe we can't be truly meek or merciful or pure in heart if we're not close to God. So the Beatitudes, I believe, describe a life that is lived on total dependence on God and that draws from Him for daily strength. Let me say again, the Beatitudes, I believe, are describing a life that is close to God and that draws on Him for daily strength. To put it even more simply, if you want to be happy, be close to God. That's the simple message. If you want to be happier, spend more time with God. Be more blessed. You know, people today go for looking for happiness in all sorts of places. New Year's Eve is a classic example of that, isn't it? And we were, as I said, we were up in the north visiting some of Breeze's family. And we're staying at this place. Anyone stayed here? No? This is the Premier Inn in Bury. Okay, so we stayed here for 3 nights. We were obviously celebrating with family on New Year's Eve. We went back to this beautiful place. I highly recommend it, by the way. Went back there and fell asleep. But then the people in the room next to us, they got in at 4 in the morning. They'd had a big party and they decided they'd continue their party at 4 until 7. And they were very loud. They were shouting. They were playing music. They were smoking, which is not allowed in the Premier Inn. They had a fight at one point. One of them came out to the corridor and punched our door with his fist really hard. That was at about 4:35 in the morning, and it was really unfortunate because Breeze just happened to be looking through the, you know, that. So that wasn't very pleasant for her. So to cut a long story short, the police were called, they were thrown out, and we had to change rooms at about 7:30 that morning. And then the cleaner, when they went in, I spoke to the cleaner, they'd been taking cocaine in the room as well. You know, so it was, but you know, the sad thing is, I might be wrong, but the sad thing is, those five adults, by the way, there should have only been two, three of them sneaked in. Those five adults probably went to their friends and they said, oh, we had an amazing New Year. We got wasted, and we got high, and then we even got kicked out of the hotel, as if these are sort of badges of honor. What a great time we had. And I don't think probably there are many of you here that would be your formula for having a good time, for being happy. Of course, we can all turn to things that are wrong, that are unhelpful, that even become sinful for us, as a way of finding comfort or happiness, and we need to watch that. So we can often turn to sin. I think if the Beatitudes tell us anything, they show us that the route to happiness is godliness and holiness. The route away from happiness is sin. Sin is exciting, but it does not create happiness as a state of life. But I think the bigger danger for us here, perhaps, is to seek happiness in the gifts God gives us rather than in the giver. Do we seek the gifts or the giver? This is a thing that I personally really have to watch out for in my own life, because it can be awfully tempting, especially in our relatively comfortable part of the world here, to base our happiness on the people God has gifted to us. That may be a marital partner, it may be children, it may be close friends, it may be wider family, it may be this fellowship. We could base our happiness on the home that we live in, on our pretty high level of physical security here, apart from the odd bit of graffiti. For most here, the relative degree of financial security, even food security, because food does tend to come in our direction with regularity and predictability. You know, it's so easy. There's nothing wrong with many of these things. These are good things, but we need to be very careful that we don't base our joy in life, our happiness, on the gifts rather than on the giver. And what about us as a church? We've got lots of good things here. But if we base our sense of blessedness on the good things God has given us, then I believe actually that we will be little more in the end than a Christian club. Yeah? We'll be a Christian club. We'll be a nice club. We'll be a lovely club. But we'll be a club nevertheless. You know, we can have nice singing and nice talks and nice coffee with nice people after the nice service. And it will be nice. It'll be lovely. But that's if we live for the gifts. But we don't live for the gifts. We live for the giver. We live for the one who pours these things into our lives, not to distract us from him, not to take our focus away from him, but to look to him even more and say, God, you're fantastic. I love you. So let's make sure that we live for the giver. In fact, if we look at the Beatitudes, we see there that discipleship that Christ calls us to will not mean that we are happy all the time in the emotional sense. It won't. Jesus didn't feel emotionally happy when he wept, or as he wept over the death of Lazarus. Jesus didn't feel emotionally happy when he grieved over the sin of Israel. He wasn't feeling emotionally happy when he was indignant at the disciples for their faithlessness. And he certainly wasn't happy in the Garden of Gethsemane when his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground because his soul was in distress. And that's why that title slide is tongue-in-cheek. Because that isn't really the right image to summarize what the Beatitudes are about. Being a disciple of Christ doesn't mean that we never stop grinning, but it does mean that we live in a state of blessedness in life, and that we can know that blessedness, that state of joy and happiness, even when we are poor or hungry or persecuted. Because our happiness is no longer grounded on those things, which are changeable, but it's now grounded on the unchanging God, as Dave mentioned earlier, the immutable, unchanging God who loves us fervently and fiercely and constantly. So that is where our hearts need to go this morning. I've met many people who they've said, basically, happiness is their goal in life. And that's if you ask, what's the thing you most want in life? I want to be happy. And it's very easy to make happiness itself an idol. But actually, happiness is something that happens along the way as we seek to know God and live for him. The Westminster Shorter Catechism was a teaching that was aimed, actually, it was aimed to teach children. It's very funny how much we changed since then, but it was aimed to teach children. It's 107 questions with 107 answers, okay? And the adults got the longer catechism. But anyway, the first one and the most famous of them all is this. What is the chief end of man? Sorry for the exclusive language. What is the chief end of man? It is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. And it's in that order. As we glorify God with our lives, we enter a state of joy and of happiness that we can enjoy forever. So that needs to be our intention as we start this new year. One of my favorite verses in the Bible is Isaiah 12, verse 2 to 3. It says, "Surely God is my salvation. I will trust and not be afraid. The Lord himself is my strength and my song." The Lord himself is my strength and my song. He has become my salvation. With joy, you will draw water from the wells of salvation. So, I want to wish you a happy new year. What will that look like for you as a disciple of Christ? Well, it might mean that you have a profound sense of your spiritual poverty without God that drives you to him. It might mean your happy new year, that you spend some time mourning and grieving over sin. It might mean that you have to learn to put others ahead of yourself. It might mean that you will spend much of the year hungering and thirsting for God. It might mean that you have to follow God's way of showing mercy and peace to others instead of anger and retaliation. It might even mean you're persecuted because of your faith in Christ. It could mean all of those things, but it will also mean that you are inheritors of the kingdom of heaven, that you will be inheritors of the new earth, and that you will be comforted by God and filled by him and one day be face to face with him. That's what discipleship means for us as disciples of Christ. And that is what Jesus calls a truly happy and blessed life. Let's just take a moment to reflect. Close your eyes if that helps. I'm going to share communion in a moment. But just as we do that, I just want you to have a single question really in your mind. And the question is, where are you looking for happiness? Where are you looking for happiness? Are you looking for it in things that are wrong, that actually the Bible describes as being unhelpful or sinful? Are you looking to base your happiness on things that are not wrong, things that are good, some of these good gifts God's given to us? Or is your happiness based on the giver, on God himself? So let's take a moment, and it may be that we just need to just speak to God and say, God, help me to center the whole of my being on you and your life in me.